It's the weekend, which means it's time for Jill on Money, the show that makes money fun and just happens to answer all your financial questions. Here's your host, Jill Schlesinger.
Welcome to Jill on Money. It's hour number two. We thank you so much for joining us. It is a delight. Why do I always lose my iPhone chargers? What is going on? And I hate that because they're a ripoff. I don't think. They might not be stolen. I'm not sure. I don't want to think about that. I want to think less nefarious, okay? I'm in positive vibe mode. Mark has now decided that he will be eating an entire package of Vienna fingers for the balance of this hour. I, however, am starving already. Okay, let's go. We have a special guest, and it's fantastic because it's Ken Blanchard. And you know what, Mark? What you didn't realize? I own another book of Ken's, which is kind of pretty awesome. And so Ken wrote a book co-authored with Claire Diaz Ortiz, and it's called 1 Minute Mentoring. I really enjoyed this. I thought it was going to be something different, and actually I really, really enjoyed it. So Ken Blanchard, the author of the new 1 Minute Manager, but more importantly, author of the current 1 Minute Mentoring, and the one that I really like. I love that book of yours, Raving Fans. That was awesome.
Oh, good, Jill. It's great to be with you. And glad you like some of those. It's been fun. You know, people said, when are you going to retire? And I said, why would I do that? I'm having too much fun.
Well, that's good. And it sounds to me like this book came about why? Because you're here because more people are talking about mentoring, or because you yourself are mentoring, or was this book a byproduct of you mentoring Claire Diaz Ortiz, or back and forth? How did it come to be?
Well, Claire actually came to me, you know, and she was one of the first employees at Twitter. She, as you know, she wrote a book called Twitter for Good. She even got the Pope to quit her, and she came to me and said, Ken, in the past, mentors have always been older. And I think us young people, she's 32 and I'm 77, she said, need the wisdom of you older people. But you know, you older people could use some wisdom from us young people, particularly around technology. And so we started to talk initially about the whole concept of cross-generational mentoring, which is really one form of mentoring. And it's just been a wonderful adventure getting to learn from her and her to learn from me. So it's just been fun, Jill.
So tell me a little bit about what you think. How do mentoring relationships go awry? So talk about that first. What has happened in the past where people say, I tried to do the mentoring thing, but it didn't work from both sides. Tell me a little about that.
I think, Jill, the key thing is before you even get into a mentoring relationship, you have to know what's the difference between essence and form. Essence is heart to heart and values to values. And form is what are we going to do, you know? And a lot of people jump into a potential mentoring relationship and they haven't spent enough time with that person to know whether you share the same values, whether you are simpatico, is that the right word, and all that. And I think that happens a lot in business and in financial deals, you know, all of a sudden somebody's got a great idea and you're off, and then you all of a sudden realize this person's coming from a whole different set of values and all that kind of thing. So I think that's what throws things off, is you don't spend the time to really see if you're really coming off the same page, not in terms of what you can learn from each other, but in terms of your values.
I think it's great the way you tell the story, which is a parable of sorts, and you talk about this relationship between two people, an older woman and a younger guy, and he's a sales guy. But what struck me, maybe because I may be a woman of a certain age, was the energy that she was able to take from the relationship. And you know what? I wish you could talk a little bit about that, because as you say, Just because you're the older person and you're seen as the mentor doesn't necessarily mean that you are going to just be giving all the time. You receive a lot in this relationship, right?
Yes, and I think part of the excitement of that is that, you know, I think the whole concept of retirement has really changed. In fact, I even wrote a book called Refire, Don't Retire. Rest of your life, the best of your life. And I think what's really great about mentoring with a young person is that you can get some ideas about some of the things that you still might want to do. And because when I was young, if somebody was 60, you thought they were half dead, you know. And now I think people are really going on. And the people who are most excited are people who retire to something, not from something. And I think that's one of the fun things about mentoring a young person, because you start to realize, wow, that's really interesting. I hadn't thought about that. And that's what happens to our gal in the story. She starts to get some energy back from this young sales guy.
And, you know, I have to say, just personally, this has happened to me as well. Very specifically, when I was a career changer, so I went from financial services into media. And when I first started in the CBS Interactive division, I didn't really know a ton about, let's say, social media. And there was a guy sitting next to me who said, I can help you with that. Really young. And to this day, we kind of mentor each other. And you're absolutely right. There's something energizing about, first of all, being able to say, I don't know this thing called Twitter. I don't know how to do this. Can you help me? And Joe, who's I think we have a mutual mentoring relationship, was really helpful. And he continues to do that to this day. But when he has a career question or a negotiation question or a financial question, he feels comfortable coming to me. And what I think has happened is in your parable, there's a goal, right? There's a defined goal. Here's what we want to accomplish, you know, after you get your values on the same page. But what's also interesting is, in my experience, is how the relationship evolves and it turns into, okay, maybe we're both in different places and we don't need that weekly contact or monthly contact, but that you now are just sort of part of one another's network, people that you're using to really help you take different steps throughout your career. And that's the thing that's so satisfying to me about the mentor-mentee relationship is that as it evolves, the roles switch pretty dramatically and can switch from time to time. So I think that's great. So hang on, because we are talking to Ken Blanchard. He's the author of 1 Minute Mentoring. And when we return with Ken, I want to talk a little bit about how you can help mentor somebody through maybe an uncomfortable situation, a mistake, and how to kind of own that mistake and what that does in terms of your relationship. So hang on, 1 Minute Mentoring. Go look up the book right now. Order it from Amazon. Ken Blanchard and Claire Diaz-Ortiz are the co-authors. And we are on the line with Ken himself. You are listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
K, IRAs, refinancing. She covers it all. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. Broadway
is dark tonight. You're back with Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. The number here is 855-411-JILL. Our email address is askjill@jillonmoney.com. And we'd love to hear from you, because we'd love to get you on to the air live to ask whatever financial questions on your mind. And if you can, how about checking out our new podcast? It's not even new anymore. It's old, but it's newish. I say anything less than 6 months is new. It's called Better Off, You can get it on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud, anywhere else you find your favorite podcast. Tell us what you think. Subscribe. Be very excellent. And if you've missed any part of this program, maybe you're just tuning in, you go to the website after you're done listening, and you can listen to the whole show, jillonmoney.com. Just click on the radio link. That's if you've missed. You can also find past shows, you know, so go do that. Okay, we're on the line with Ken Blanchard. He's the author of 1 Minute Mentoring, How to Find and Work with a Mentor, and why you'll benefit from being one. And Ken, I really was interested in, there's a chapter where you've got the, okay, so if you're just joining us, this is about, it's a parable in this book and about mentoring. Josh is the younger salesman. Diane is the sort of wise, seasoned salesperson. And in the book, Diane makes a referral to somebody she knows and says, you know, hey, Josh, go talk to this guy. And at the end of the meeting, the young salesperson, even though he's not really gone in with the intention of trying to do this, he sort of blurts out like, oh, even though I'm trying to do this meeting for networking, he tries to sell the guy. And can you talk a little bit about how you came up with this idea to sort of create a whoops moment and how the mentor-mentee relationship can move forward from that?
Well, Jill, I think that one of the important things is we developed a little acronym called MENTOR, you know, and M is for mission. You know, what do you, once you decide you're going to work with each other, what do you want to accomplish? And then E is engagement, you know, how often do you want to meet, how, on the phone or whatever. And then N is network, and this was a, you know, you each have a network that you might share for the other one in terms of what they're working on. But T is trust, and I think the key thing here is the whole trust thing, and that when she found out about her young mentee, you know, kind of selling the person that she networked him to and all, rather than sort of just writing him off, you know, how could he be so stupid and all, they had developed a relationship that she could honestly, you know, confront him and say what was going on here. And it really built their relationship rather than tore it down, because she wasn't in there, beating him up. It was just sort of saying, what do you think's going on? I don't think this is right. And it's interesting, Jill, I never was much for writing a journal, you know, because I know people who write journals in 4 colors and they write poetry and all that. Mm-hmm. Until a friend of mine says, I got a perfect thing for you for a journal, Ken, and it's really out of some of your work. And so I've started doing it at the top. You put the date and you do it at the night, and you put praisings. What did I do today that I really feel good about in terms of who I want to be? And then you write redirections. Is there anything that I did today when I think about it that I might want to, revisit? I think if you haven't made any mistakes in your life, or even in the last 2 weeks, you probably lie about other things, too.
Or maybe the last 2 hours.
Yeah.
You know?
And so I think that's got to be part of the mentoring relationship, you know, because it can't be one where you're sitting around, you know, judging, you know, in a harsh kind of way. But, you know, feedback, I've always felt, is the breakfast of champions, you know, which you've read about. And so that's got to be part of it in terms of helping each other be the best you can possibly be is part of the deal.
Ken, you know, we have so many people who are sort of conducting themselves in non-traditional employment arrangements, the gig economy, and they're working part-time, or they've got their freelancing, and they may not have access to maybe colleagues who would really make for great mentoring, or there's no formal mentoring program that they can tap into. What advice would you have for somebody who really seeks a mentor but doesn't have an easy way to access one? What would you tell that person?
Well, first of all, you have to start to look around and use your present network. You know, it could be even your parents or some people that you know, and say, you know, I have an issue that I'm working on. Do you know anybody that might be helpful in that? And it's really interesting when you talk about looking for a mentoring. It doesn't mean you have to have one that's going to last for a long time, like our our two characters in the book. But it might be somebody that you hear about. You say, "Would you be willing to have lunch? I'm working on a certain issue, and I heard that you might have some advice for me." And I think it's once you open your mind to the idea that, boy, it'd be really fun to find somebody who could mentor me a little bit and give me some advice, and make that aware to people around you, things will come up. I think when you sort of say, "Oh, God, I can't find one,"
right.
You mope around. It doesn't do any good.
It sure doesn't. And it's interesting also to consider that, when you tap into those, you dip in that way, talk a little bit about how you need to be careful not to just take, right? Because you're saying, "I'm working on something," but how do you make it so that the person you're soliciting advice doesn't necessarily feel like, "Oh, this person just keeps coming and taking from me"? Like, what is a way to give back in that respect?
Well, I think every time, I've had a relationship where I've really been asking for advice, I always end by saying or put in there, "Is there any way I can help you? What are you working on?" I mean, that's just a wonderful question, I think, that you ought to always be involved in the discussion. One of the things that I think is so silly in businesses is that take older people and say, "Okay, it's retirement age, you're gone," And I think it'd really be good to keep some of these older people around, maybe a half-time or part-time, to mentor younger people. I think it would be a wonderful way to not lose the wisdom that you might have if you just send people off to the pasture.
I can't agree more. I think that it's incredibly short-sighted of many employers. Last question for you. After you wrote this book, what did you learn about mentoring yourself?
Well, I had never really thought about the dual aspect of mentoring, even though when I look back, it really happened, but I hadn't really thought about it. So that was the big aha to me, is that if you're going to be a mentor to someone else, you're going to get something back, particularly if you're open to learn. And also, if you're looking for a mentor as a mentee, to recognize that maybe you can also help them in some way. And, people say to us, "Joe, why did you call it one-minute mentoring?" Because a lot of times when you look at the real pearls of goodness that you've gotten, they didn't take that long to get. It might be over a lunch or just even a casual conversation. Somebody says something to you, right?
That is actually a perfect place to end on a real positive note. We all could use a little mentoring and a little positive impact on our lives. Ken Blanchard, author of 1 Minute Mentoring, How to Find and Work with a Mentor, and Why You'll Benefit from Being One. Thank you so much for joining us here on Jill on Money. It's been great. You're listening to Jill on Money. And if you've got a financial question, we'd love to hear from you. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. AskJill@JillOnMoney.com. We'll be right back.
Wondering how to make your money work for you? Get on the line now. 855-411-JILL. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger.
Mark says it's an oldie but a goodie. I used to love this song. This was on my playlist, that it was like my workout playlist. Actually, it used to be on my running playlist when I used to run. Boo hoo, which I can't do anymore. Mark and I are too old to run. You are listening to Jill on Money, and this is a program where money is not scary, it's not boring, we're having a little fun with it, okay? I am Jill Schlesinger. I am a certified financial planner. In fact, I am the senior CFP board ambassador, which is why I love answering your questions. And to that end, if you've got a financial question, we'd like to hear from you. Our phone number here is 855-411-JILL. Our email address, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Ed writes that he is over 50. He puts the maximum $24,000 into his 401k every year, meaning $18,000 plus an extra $6,000 because he's over 50. In addition to that, can I also contribute $6,500 into an IRA outside of my 401k? It depends on what you mean. Yes, you can do it. Whether it's deductible or not depends on whether or not you make more money than the IRS allows. So here's the deal. For if you're covered by a retirement plan at work, these are the 16 levels. I got to make sure I know. Well, I don't know if I know the 17 levels yet. Hold on a second. I got it. Stand by. Okay. So for this tax year, we're in 2017. If you are single or head of household and you make less than $62,000, you can put that $6,500 into an IRA and you can take that deduction, which is pretty great. Now, if you make between $62,000 and $72,000, you get a partial deduction. If you make more than $72,000, then you don't get any deduction. If you are married and you file jointly, less than $99,000, full deduction. Phase out between $99,000 and $119,000. $119,000 or more, no deduction. So you can do it. Whether or not you can deduct it is up to the limits on your income. If you are outside of that limit, you can make a deduction. I mean, you can make a contribution, but that would be a non-deductible contribution. Not bad. That's not a terrible way to go either. So hope that helps. Here's another IRA question. I don't know what this person's name is. Let's call him Jerry. Here we go. Jerry. Contributed to a traditional IRA for several years. And see, he has not been able to deduct these contributions because of his income level and because he's got a 401k. So he says these are after-tax contributions. So I suspect that I have a cost basis of when I will need to withdraw, but I don't know how to determine what it is. Can you help? This is what my friend Ed Slott always warns against when he says that with people having to keep track of their information. So here's the deal, Jerry. I don't know how many times you've done this, but chances are what you're going to have to do is figure out exactly how much money you put in. And that, I believe, is going to be your cost basis. And then what you take out is going to be your appreciation. I mean, like, you know, the difference between what you put in and Let me reframe that. What you put in, that's your cost basis. Whatever is accumulated, the total value of the account is now that portion of which is going to be what you need to really understand. So if you don't have any of the information, you're going to have to make your best guesstimate as to maybe going back into your checking account to see what checks you wrote that went into that. And then recreate the data. But I guess the lesson of all of this is you got to keep track of this stuff, guys. And if you're not keeping track of it, it's a little bit of a nightmare, but I think you're going to be able to recreate it. And if you have this non-deductible IRA, you may even want to consider a backdoor Roth. Of course, you're going to need this information, this tax information, before you actually do a backdoor Roth. So you're going to have to get it, and you're going to have to make the best guess as to what you've put in. Go back through your checkbook. You might find it. Okay. Bev says, we started a 529 plan 20 years ago when they first started. Our son is now 28. He's on again, off again with school, though I think he will eventually graduate. The account should cover his tuition until he graduates. My question is whether to move the account to another one from our state or leave it. We started in Rhode Island because our home state of California didn't have 529 plans then. Then I was reading about the American Opportunity Credit or the Lifetime Learning Credit. I wonder how this may be affected since our son is no longer a minor. Is there a simple way to read about 529 plans? There's $41,000 in the account now. If he doesn't use it all, I was pondering transferring it to our grandchildren. P.S. Wish the advice of putting money in Roth instead of 529 had been more prevalent 20 years ago. Well, who knew? Who knew, right? Okay, so let's talk a little bit about some resources for you first. When you are looking for info about 529 plans, there's a couple of different places you can go. If you go to choose to save. It's, hold on, it's going to come to me. Where is this? I have my resources. Savingforcollege.com. That's one. Check that out. That will give you some info about 529 plans. I think that could be helpful. There is also Edvisors, which I think is a very good website. That's Mark Kantrowitz. That was his site. I'm not sure he's still involved with it or not. But that will have some good information there. And usually they have a nice thing about, you know, not just loans, but saving for college as well. And when you're really looking at the 529 plan in terms of comparing plan to plan, just be careful that whatever you're doing going forward is a 529 plan that doesn't have big fees or charges. We want to really make sure you keep an eye on that. The Rhode Island plan, I think when you're out of state or when you're out of state, there was maybe even a commission that was charged for that. So don't do that again. My favorite 529 plans that are not based on your state of residence, Nevada, Utah, Alaska, Maryland. Thanks for writing. You're listening to Jill on Money. When we return, more of your questions. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. AskJill at JillOnMoney.com. We'll be right back.
The cure to your financial problems could be a phone call away. 855-411-JILL is the number to dial. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone number here is 855-411-JILL. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. AskJill at JillOnMoney.com. And that's what Ken did. Ken's got two kids, age 27 and 24. Both are gainfully employed, do not live at home. Wow. There you go. That's your first measure of success. Neither of them have student loans or debt of any kind. So far, so good. Both have managed to save pretty impressive sums of money, which they have dutifully salted away in checking accounts. In addition to the money they have made and saved, They have mutual funds with my financial advisor. I've been encouraging them to take control of their money and begin to invest and think long term. My kids are serious environmentalists, and even though I've explained to them what a mutual fund is, I don't think they understand that inside that opaque money sausage of stocks are the very companies and industries hell-bent on destroying the planet. As Bill McKibben says, if it's wrong to wreck the climate, then it's wrong to profit from that wreckage. It shouldn't be too hard to direct my kids to funds that are fossil fuel free, but how do I go about extricating myself from a 30-year tangle of investments that do not reflect my values? What are the pitfalls? Ken in New York. It's a great question. Look, there are some socially conscious investment funds. Okay. It's difficult, depends what you define as your socially conscious fund, you know, but there are various ones out there. So let's go through some of them and then I'm going to tell you the pitfalls. There's a fund called the Domini Funds, Amy Domini. She's a very interesting woman, actually, who started this. She's sort of the early ones. There are index funds. ETFs through iShares. There's one that's it tracks index of companies that have positive environmental, social, and governance characteristics. So it trades under the symbol of DSI. It's a socially responsible ETF. So try that one. There's one for you. That's one, though. There is one that will screen out tobacco companies. There's one, an iShares, that will do low carbon ETF. CRBN is the name of that one. Let's see what else I got for you. Hold on. I'm going through here. There's a fossil fuel one that's called SPYX. It's a spider. So you should look through here and, you know, kind of check it out. Here's the problem that you're going to run into. Number one, when you actually get out of your current investments, you might be creating a tax event. So if you have funds that are outside of an IRA or a rollover or a Roth, then you're going to have a problem there. Okay. But the other thing is that, you know, this may not be really great diversification. So that's what you really have to be careful about. And the question for you is really how much you can diversify within the framework of putting together a socially responsible portfolio. Oh, I forgot the other one. My buddy Hardeep Walia's firm, Motif Investing. You should check that out because that will allow you to create a portfolio with exactly those that screen. And you know, they have some suggestions, you know, in terms of kind of how to screen out certain companies, but check out Motif Investing as well. I guess the long story short is, yes, you're right. It'll be easier for your kids because they're just starting out. The tough part for you is going to be whether or not you have a tax event by shifting your portfolio and whether or not you can gain enough diversification. So give it a whirl. Let me know how that works out. It's a lofty goal, indeed. Okay. How much time there? 1.5. I'll do this quickly. Victoria's 79. She's got $100,000 from a CD that matured last month. She's got a net worth of over $1 million. What's the best way to invest this? I don't need the cash. We've got condos, cars, etc. Like your advice. I think that she was looking for information about an annuity with insurance. Don't do that, Victoria. If you've got $100,000, what I would do is I would put it into your general portfolio and keep it diversified. And I wouldn't do more than that. And I wouldn't get too cute. And I wouldn't lock it up into an annuity where you're going to pay a big fat fee and wrong time in your life to do that. If you don't like risks, make sure your portfolio in general is skewed a little bit more conservatively. Stick to low-cost index funds and don't fret too much. That's kind of where we go with it. All right. Thank you for your question. You are listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL, or send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back. You're back with Jill on Money. Before we settle up and close down for the day, just another quick question from one of you. And this is about long-term care. By the way, do you know how few people actually carry long-term care insurance? I think it's about 3% of U.S. adults. So that's amazing. I mean, it's amazing considering that, you know, there's going to be like 80 million Americans who are going to be 65 and older by the year 2050. It is expensive. And more importantly, there's a problem because a lot of the companies that used to write long-term care insurance no longer are in the business. So every week I get questions about where to get it. There are a limited number of insurers that are still selling them. Mutual of Omaha Insurance, New York Life, Northwestern Mutual. These three, don't write me about the other 50 that might, but I'm going to mention those three because they have high financial strength ratings. And remember, the whole deal with insurance is not about, it's the cheapest. It's who's going to pay. And I think that's important. And so I like those three companies are kind of smart in the way that they manage their risk also. And, you know, there's a ton of people who bought policies where they've had double-digit percentage rate increases or, you know, companies just pulling out of the markets. And so what do you do if that's happened to you? You just want to check in and see whether it makes sense, even if you've got a big premium increase, maybe you keep the policy just to have some minimal amount of money coming in if you were to need long-term care. You know, I guess the other piece of this is that not everyone does need long-term care insurance. So, you know, it's important to remember that just because someone is selling it to you doesn't mean that you should buy it. Okay? There's your long-term care insurance primer. I'm sure I'll write about it at some point and we'll put that up on the website. Okay, thanks so much for listening. It's been a great show. So remember, if you've got a question that's burning in your little soul, give us a holler, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. And we will catch up with you next week. Thanks for listening.